Governor Holcomb won't reimpose a mask mandate in schools. Purdue gives away the awards in its vaccine lottery, plus the CDC's eviction moratorium ending, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending July 30th, 2021.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller, a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Governor Eric Holcomb said he won't reimpose any mask mandates in Hoosier schools, only urging students, teachers, and staff to mask up amid a surge of COVID-19. The CDC issued guidance Tuesday that recommends anyone in a school setting, even vaccinated people, wear a mask as the Delta variant drives up cases around the country. Indiana previously required masks in schools before rescinding that order after June. Holcomb says he recommends taking every safe step possible to keep children in school.
We've seen what a whacking our kiddos have taken with the pandemic over this last year in terms of learning loss, etc. And so we don't want to watch the same movie again.
Masks will still be required on school buses under federal rules. Individual school districts can decide whether to require face coverings in school buildings. Should mask mandates be reimposed on K-12 schools? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Arielle Brandy. Republican Jennifer Hollowell. John Schwannis, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Nikki Kelly, Statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Arielle Brandy, should the state leave it up to local districts to decide?
Well, I think what we run into is a similar situation we had a year ago, where a lot of these school districts were having to decide what to do with our children. I'm a mother. I have school-aged children. I'm concerned as well. But I'm very grateful that Democrats were able to deliver at least $2 billion under the American Rescue Plan in order for our schools to be prepared for what's to come, to be able to deliver PPE to our teachers and our students, and also to be able to have the proper ventilation that Dr. Box talked about today in regards to how our schools need to operate, similar to how our hospital facilities are. So with that in mind, I do think that it is definitely in the most best interest for us to be thinking about how we mask up going forward, especially with the Delta variant on the rise.
Dr. Box, in that briefing that Arielle just mentioned today, was asked about, you know, she and Dr. Weaver strongly urge everyone to mask up in schools, given the new CDC guidance and given the Delta variant, but that local officials have told her, she said, that they want to make those decisions for themselves. Are those the people who should be making those decisions?
Definitely. I think that it should be left up to individual communities and schools and organizations in terms of how they want to move forward. You know, this is all challenging because there's been a lot of mixed messaging for a long time. And I understand it's something new, and so maybe we didn't know, but you can't blame people for being frustrated when first, don't wear a mask. You have to wear a mask. If you're vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask. If you're vaccinated, now you do have to wear a mask to protect someone who chose not to be vaccinated. Like, people are really frustrated. And I think that if someone tried to mandate something at the state level, there would be a revolt. And I think you're gonna see that in some of these individual communities as well. And so it's, yes, I think each organization should decide for themselves, and then parents and students and customers can then decide for themselves.
You talk about mixed messaging, though, and I agree on that front. But is there the risk of, well, you know, school district A in this county is decided to mask up, but school district B is decided not to mask up, and school district C in the county over is decided to only mask up for unvaccinated individuals? Are you running the risk there, because you're leaving it up to individual school districts, of mixed messaging in every corner of the state?
You have glimpsed the future, Brandon. That is, in fact, what will happen. But this is another instance of science versus sentiment. And we've seen it time and time again. And I think, given what we went through in this state and other states went through in terms of friction and frustration over mandates, even though they were made good medical sense and good science sense, we saw the battle that took place here and elsewhere. I don't think science wins here. I think sentiment wins here. And sentiment is in the corner of letting local school districts make that decision. I guess the argument that for doing it on a broader basis is to prevent that kind of confusion you're talking about, and also because you do have presumably a number of children who fall below the age threshold for whom the vaccine has been cleared for use by the CDC. So they haven't had the opportunity to enter into this fray that adults have, like, will I get vaccinated or will I not get vaccinated? They're sort of along for the ride. So that certainly would argue for, but again, I think all of that falls flat when you look at the notion of the state being able or having the stomach or the appetite to pursue some sort of statewide mandate.
At their briefing today, Dr. Box and Dr. Weaver got several questions about this idea of, you know, on one hand, their message is we strongly urge you to do this. The science is clear. We need these multiple strategies to help, you know, because the Delta variant is so infectious. And yet, well, we're not going to tell you what to do. We're just going to ask you to do these things. Are those questions going to continue as we get into the school year?
Probably. I mean, I'm fascinated by this whole topic, and we actually wrote a story that's running this weekend about it. You know, by leaving it up to each individual district, I mean, even before the CDC changed the guidance this week, districts were already going against it. I mean, the earlier guidance was just mask up for unvaccinated, which would have been anyone under 12.
Right.
And so now what I've seen a few districts changing their policy for mask optional, but they're going to the old guidance, not even the new guidance. Like I suppose we're going to have to see how spread works, you know, with kids and the Delta variant. One scientific thing, and I think it's a fair discussion for districts to say, is, you know, there are very, you know, a much lower number of cases in kids, much, you know, I think we've only had 8 deaths in Indiana of someone from 0 to 19 years of age. So, I mean, the stakes are different, and some parents, about half the parents seem to be fine without masks, and about half the parents want them, so.
Jennifer made this point earlier, and I want to ask you about it before we move on, which is the idea of, even if we're leaving this to local school districts to decide and local leaders, but even then, are we setting ourselves up for just a war of people who absolutely refuse to do this and then passing that on through their kids?
Yeah, I think we do, because what we've seen with just this pandemic as a whole, it's become so political. And I don't want us to run into a situation where masking up or versus not masking up becomes another political thing, and then we're putting more children at risk, their parents and our teachers at risk, because we're making this another political issue, when we just need to really figure out how we follow these CDC guidelines, continue to distance, continue to mask up, and really, really hone in on the fact of how we can protect our kids in our school districts.
All right, well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, should Governor Holcomb reimpose a statewide mask mandate in K-12 schools? A, yes, or B, no. Last week, we asked you if the redistricting public meetings will be enough to ensure transparency as lawmakers redraw Indiana's legislative district maps. Just 10% of you say yes, 90% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Purdue University has been announcing over the past week its old golden ticket recipients who will receive a year's free tuition to the university as part of its COVID-19 vaccination effort. In May, Purdue announced it would hold a tuition lottery for students who submit proof of vaccination. Bailey Leffler, senior brand manager at Purdue, says the tuition lottery is intended to boost Purdue's vaccination numbers. So far, roughly 60% of students and 66% of employees have reported being fully vaccinated.
You know, we've just elected to go with the choice method and hoping that speaks for itself.
Universities like Notre Dame and Indiana University have mandated the vaccine and are reporting higher overall vaccination rates. The American College Health Association's COVID-19 task force recommended that, when able, colleges and universities make vaccines a mandate. Jennifer Hollowell, Purdue's numbers aren't as good as other Indiana colleges and universities that mandated the vaccine. So amid this surge, should they rethink their approach?
I think that Purdue should decide what's best for Purdue. And, I mean, as far as their numbers, also some of these other institutions, as we talked about on a previous show are just having folks attest to it. So we don't know if they're really vaccinated or not. They're just attesting to the fact that they are.
Because there are legal questions as to whether or not they can actually require that proof anyway.
So. Right, exactly. So, I think that each institution should decide for themselves, kind of like I said earlier. And then, you know, students can decide from there. Personally, you know, I would love for people to be vaccinated, especially if they're going to be around my mother. But at the end of the day, until there's full FDA approval, I think it continues to be a problem. And, you mentioned something about being political. And, I mean, truthfully, it's been political on both sides the whole way around. You know, I remember when Kamala Harris was asked if she would take the vaccine, and that's when it was, you know, Trump's vaccine, and she wouldn't commit to that. So, we can go through and point fingers all the way through, mixed messages and politics playing into it. But right now, I just think each organization decide for themselves, and hopefully we get through this.
I want to pick up on something she said, which is whether it's universities, K-12 schools, private businesses, do things change, do you think, with mandates or not, once and expecting it will be full approval from the FDA as opposed to this EUA that we've been under?
I think one of the things that we really need to think about is we focus so much on the fact that a lot of private institutions and, you know, universities are thinking about requiring this mandate of their students and their employees being vaccinated. Great. We really need to shift the focus on the fact that half of our state is still unvaccinated and how we get that message out to those people to ensure that they become those people that are vaccinated so we don't have to continue having this conversation over what we can mandate and what we can't. And we know that half the state is still unvaccinated. How do we move forward at getting the information out to those folks to make sure that they're not harming people's mothers or other people's students? And I think that's what we need to focus on as a state.
In terms of getting that message out, though, I mean, in your mind, is there more the state can do at this point?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we've been on this bandwagon, you know, since, February? I mean, at some point, the state has done its job. It's there. It's available in every county, multiple places. We've been talking about it ad nauseum for, you know, months and months and months. I think the people, you know, I would say the large majority of the people who are left have made their choice. And it's not so much they don't have access or it's an awareness. I mean, we've covered all that. So at some point, they're making their choice. So
in a debate this week, in the debates this week over the governor reimposing restrictions or not, or whether, you know, some universities or private businesses should mandate or not, we've heard the phrase, Dr. Box used it several times, the governor used it this morning with me, personal responsibility, that we, you know, people need to take responsibility for keeping themselves and others healthy and get the vaccine. Half of our state isn't vaccinated. Nikki just pointed out it's available. They've seemed to have made their choice. Can we rely on personal responsibility?
Well, mathematically speaking, half of the Hoosier population is by definition below average in its adherence to personal hygiene standards and safety standards. So I guess mathematically, that being the average, a lot of people, you know, millions of people are out there thumbing their nose or at least ignoring what the calls from not only the state of Indiana but the CDC and other health professionals. You know, I think more and more entities are starting to go, the federal government, of course, now when we're talking about, you know, millions of employees and then not only direct employees but contractors. I think we're seeing a move that direction. A lot of employers that might have been sort of on the fence before seem to now, with the Delta variant in force, seem to be moving in that direction. Purdue, I think, perhaps because of its administration, this is a person, keep in mind, who's a college president who has his finger on the sentiments of the public. He's a former, even though he was at one time a pharmaceutical executive, he probably is best known as a politician, that being our former governor, Mitch Daniels. If you look at some of his predecessors, including the former dean of the IU School of Medicine, Stephen Bearing, who was served several 10 years before, prior to the current tenure, one must wonder, and this is a rhetorical question only, if they would have taken the same approach coming out of a medical background, or even a Martin Jiskey who he was a rocket scientist, or Francie Cordova, now that I feel obliged apparently to name every Purdue president
the last 4 years.
My point being, we had scientists, now we have a politician. And I'm not somebody who says the P word is a bad word. I like politics, public service is an honorable profession. But it might be that there's an adherence to a different sort of measuring stick.
It's philosophical as much as anything.
And
else.
Let's be honest, I do want to make one notation. The IU mandate might as well not exist anymore. This week they, put in this ethical exemption. They didn't really tell anyone about it. I mean, now there's basically, I can just walk up for any old reason and be like, nope, sorry, I don't want to get it. So
on top of what Jennifer talked about earlier, which is they're attesting that they got it, which, all right. Fingers crossed, everybody. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's nationwide eviction moratorium is ending July 31st. And Indiana housing advocates have long been sounding the alarm about an eviction cliff as that moratorium ends. Estimates suggest there are tens of thousands of pending evictions already filed in Indiana courts, and advocates say they're in a race against the clock to get help to Hoosiers struggling to pay their rent.
Judge Kimberly Bacon says a statewide task force is working to give guidance to judges on how to connect tenants with, in her words, access to justice.
Not just from the judiciary, but also from being able to obtain a little advice so that they're able to figure out how to have a softer landing or get to the resources necessary for them to get this behind them.
Evictions are coming, though, and housing advocate Amy Nelson says the state needs to confront their long-term impact.
We need an eviction expungement law here in the state to try to get and to try to address all these evictions that are going to be sitting there from this time period.
Nelson says an eviction on your record can make it substantially harder in the future to access housing.
John Schwanis, Indiana House Democrats had a hearing on this eviction cliff when we thought it was going to end at the end of June. The state had only, I think, dispersed like 30-something million out of the $300 billion that they had been given by the federal government for rental assistance. Now, they've dispersed half of that $373 billion, so that's a lot in just a month's time.
Sorry, billion?
Billion. Or excuse me, millions. Millions.
Any more? Let's see.
Millions, billions. It's all just
a couple
more just
zeros.
Water coming down like rain. But they've already dispersed now half of that $373 million. Thank you, Nikki. Are we starting to see them do enough that as that moratorium ends, it's really going to get people help?
Well, moving in the right direction, certainly. And that was an argument that as this reaches crescendo in Congress, which is where now this fight has to take place, because the Supreme Court has said essentially that it no longer can be done as a health mandate by the CDC or the White House. It has to have explicit approval by Congress. And of course, that's why the White House is seeking, I've heard, now 5 months perhaps additionally. And what you're seeing on Republicans in some of the arguments that have just bubbled up today and this week, that's very thing. We gave this money to the states. We gave them, in this case, billions of dollars collectively. And guess what? They have not spent it. So until they do, and I'm paraphrasing here, of course, until they do, we're not going to give you any more. It wasn't that harsh, but that was the message. So as long as states probably are sitting on some of the dollars that were intended for this purpose, there won't be a lot of appetite on Capitol Hill, probably, certainly among Republicans for this. But something's got to give. I mean, we're going to see there's a crisis here. And whether the crisis takes place, frankly, this weekend or in September or at the end of October or the end of the year, guess what? There will be a crisis.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, it matters to people who are going to lose their homes. But at some point, do you just have to say, well, it's got to stop sometime, so let's stop it now and then address it, the problems that pop up?
Yeah, I mean, we can't just keep kicking it down, or then the cliff just gets higher and higher. It has to happen. I think the eviction expungement idea was definitely new and interesting take. Another person that I had seen this week suggested, and this would be innovative, instead of using that money that we have to pay back rent, maybe we use it to pay security deposits to get a new place when you're getting evicted. I mean, that's a new kind of way to try to help people find that soft soft landing, a new place to live.
Yeah, the state's program, there have also been local programs, which are a little more restrictive, so hopefully some of that money is being used a little differently. But at this point, assuming that the eviction moratorium does end tomorrow, and this cliff effect probably almost certainly happens, does the state need to think differently about how then it's using its money? Because I know some landlords, we've heard from landlords who just say, I don't want to get involved in that. Just either they can pay or they won't. I want them out. So does the state need to figure out how to use this money maybe a little differently?
Yeah, I do. I think that our state needs to really be in favor of renters more than what they were. I mean, we saw what happened during the general session this past, you know, year. We did not see our legislators be in favor of renters, you know, especially on the Republican side. On the Democrat side, we did see that. And we did see Governor Holcomb step in and actually, you know, overturn what had happened in regards to the moratorium, which is great. But now we're running into the fact of a cliff, like you said, 5 more months for Congress to be able to act on this. And people don't have that amount of time to wait when they're looking at the fact of losing their homes. Like, it needs to happen now. We need to make it a definite priority here in our state, because losing a home and then having to figure out how you come out of it or what resources you have to fall on top of, like you said, a lot of this local stuff is very hard. The restrictions are there, and a lot of people don't have time to even think about that. So we really need to prioritize this.
Obviously, the situation has been worsened, as so many have, by the pandemic. But Indiana had eviction issues before COVID-19 came along. Mm-hmm. Marion County, I think I just read this week, is instituting a program where they're trying to get legal representation to folks who are going to court, who the vast majority of the time are on their own when they're getting evicted in a courtroom. Is something like that on a broader level in the state also going to, could something like that make a difference?
Oh, I think so. And I think, I mean, look, this has been, it has been a pretty tough issue for a long time. And I think we are all grateful that federal money came in and eventually to assist people. And the pandemic made it a lot worse. Obviously, folks, you know, lost their jobs as businesses were shut down, et cetera. And so all of that exacerbated the problem. And so a lot of people, I think, are being able to come out of it, but some still haven't. Yes, I think long term, hopefully, we figure out some way to improve this system for Hoosiers with access and services, because navigating that, you know, is challenging, and when you're already going through a lot of other things. So hopefully.
Well, Hoosiers caught violating Indiana's hands-free driving law will now get an added penalty, points on their driving record, enough of which can lead to a suspension of their license. When lawmakers passed the bill banning cell phone use while driving unless hands-free in 2020, the only penalty for the first year was a fine, up to $500. Now, Bureau of Motor Vehicles Commissioner Peter Lacey says people who violate that law will have 4 points added to their license. Accruing 20 points within 2 years for any infractions gets a driver's license suspended.
Traveling Indiana roads is a shared endeavor that is only made safer when we are aware of the law and making good decisions behind the wheel.
In the first year of the hands-free law, Indiana police wrote more than 5,000 tickets and issued more than 10,000 warnings. State Police spokesperson Ron Galaviz says police will focus more on citations than warnings going forward. Nikki Kelly, can this new points penalty make more of an impact in curbing distracted driving?
Probably for some people. I mean, the fact is that if you know you can die when you text or drive, and that's not stopping people from doing it.
A couple points on your license not going to do the trick? John.
You'd think vaccinations would have a similar impact, but I guess maybe not.
Could be talking about some of the same population.
Yeah.
One of the people who spoke at the press conference yesterday equated this to the seatbelt law, which is was on the books a long time, and it took a long time to really get a significant part of the population used to. Are we facing the same thing with texting and driving or holding
sure.
your cell phone while driving?
I am guessing that a large percentage of the Hoosier population does not at this point realize that it's illegal. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just the fact. Things take time. I don't know if it's, we have had a lot on our plate as a state lately.
There's been something going
on
last
year.
Normally
there might be a public awareness campaign, you know, public service spots, billboards to help people aware.
And there's been some of that.
And there's been some, but again, a lot of competition for people's time and attention.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, finally, the Indiana State Fair begins this weekend, a year after it was canceled for the first time since World War II. With the fair, of course, comes exciting and in some cases possibly disturbing new food options. This year that includes Philly cheesesteak fries, a Fruity Pebbles
funnel cake, and something called Winner Winner Chicken Dinner, which is mac and cheese and coleslaw topped with popcorn chicken and chives served in a waffle cone bowl. Jennifer Hollowell, is there a fair food you are looking forward to?
Since my brothers, Brandon and Jeffrey, were champions and grand champions in the swine barn in the late 70s and early 80s, my first stop is always the pork producer tent.
That's a pretty good plug. How about you?
Me, I'm always down for some good kettle corn whenever I leave. That's my snack on the way out.
Another quality Indiana product.
The Fruity Pebble
funnel cake
is intriguing, but I am going this year. I always try to try like one kind of weird thing, deep fried cheesecake bites.
Yeah, ooh, that's the top of my list too. That chicken bowl thing though is throwing me off. I think it's the coleslaw with the mac and cheese, or maybe the waffle cone bowl.
I would still try it.
Yeah, I'd probably still.
You know, the deep fried vaccine may be a sleeper this year.
All right, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Arielle Brandy, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.